In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, I talk with Josh Pigford, founder of Baremetrics, about the good and bad of competition, transparency, and funding. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 244. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at launching software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob, and Mike is on vacation, and we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So Mike is out of town in Hershey, Pennsylvania with his family, and so this week I decided to bring Josh Pigford, founder of Baremetrics, on the show because he has a lot of unique experience. He bootstrapped a SaaS business for the past couple years, and it had a great growth trajectory, and amidst that, he's had a ton of competition crop up. He's also raised a small round of funding to help with his growth, and he's been very transparent with all of their numbers. They actually publish a dashboard with all the growth numbers and the lifetime value and churn and pretty much open the kimono on it, and that's at demo.baremetrics.com. So I talked to Josh about all three of those topics because of anyone I know, he's really in the midst of the throes of competition, funding, and transparency. So I hope you enjoy his takes on these topics. Let's dive right into the interview. So today I have the pleasure of speaking with Josh Pigford. You probably know him as the founder of Baremetrics. If you haven't heard about Baremetrics, they are one-click analytics for Stripe. So if you're using the subscription API with Stripe, particularly if you have a SaaS app, Baremetrics gives you a really cool dashboard of all your numbers and your churn and lifetime value and all that kind of stuff. Typically the stuff that you spend a week or two with a developer trying to build out. So it's not something that most SaaS providers want to spend their time doing. And Josh has a pretty unique story. He's had strong growth since he launched. He got out ahead of the market and then raised a little bit of funding. And that's why I wanted to have him on the show today to talk about it. So thanks, Josh, for taking the time to join us.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
Absolutely. All right. So I want to cover a couple topics today in particular. The first one I want to start with is transparency. Transparency is something that you've been a big advocate of in the sense that from really early on in Baremetrics history, you wanted to kind of have a live demo of Baremetrics, of the dashboard. And so you just open the kimono and essentially you show all the numbers for Baremetrics. That's at demo.baremetrics.com for those who want to go check it out. And it's your live numbers. Obviously, you've obfuscated. There's customer names in there that are changed for the protection of the innocent. But you have real lifetime value and your real month recurring revenue and all that stuff. Tell me a little bit about the motivation for it and if you think that's been a plus or a minus for Baremetrics growth.
Sure, sure. So we back in, I guess it's been a little over a year and a half now. So February 2014, I had this idea of like, I need a demo for the software. I mean, I guess I didn't have to have one, but it just seemed like it was the easiest way to convey the value. And honestly, it was all kind of a result of my own laziness. So I thought I need a demo and I could spend a ton of time pumping out like fake data and trying to generate enough fake data to like look like I have a legit dashboard. But I mean, there's a lot to Baremetrics. So like there's a, you know, a dozen plus metrics and each of those have their own individual metrics pages with even more in-depth data on all those. It would have taken so much time to put all it together. And I thought, or I could just add a line of code and make my own stuff public. So I went with the lazy route. And at that time, we weren't making a ton of money. I think I was doing like, I don't know, a few thousand bucks a month. And so just decided, hey, we'll put it out there. And there's, I guess, a little bit of altruism to it in the sense that I've been building software for the web for a decade. And I always appreciated other people kind of giving me a look into what their startup looks like, successful or not. And there's a little bit of that aspect of it. But I mean, it initially was a bit of laziness that turned into something bigger.
Sure. And now that you are obviously substantially more than a few thousand dollars a month, and since your revenue is public, I don't have trouble saying it, but it looks like I think your MRR right now is 32 or 33,000. Now that the stakes are a little bigger and you have competition and that kind of stuff, do you, maybe regret's too strong of a word, but do you still think it was the right choice? And are you happy every day when you wake up and see your numbers in public?
So it's a mixture. Was it the right move? Absolutely. I mean, so many things came out of it. So kind of the biggest plus was that Buffer, another startup, decided to make their stuff public through Barometrics as well. And they're substantially larger. I mean, I think their MRR is like $400,000 a month, or maybe even like $500,000. So it's a lot of money, and a lot of people follow them. And so that would not have happened had I not made mine public, because kind of that wasn't even an option to make your all this revenue public. And so, or at least not in this like easy one-click setup. So I don't regret it. It was definitely the right move, but man, did it bring up a number of copycats that poured in after that was substantial. So yeah, but there's been a couple of, I would say, legitimate competitors, but the large, I mean, 90%+ of them, I mean, a lot of them just literally directly rip off like the design and everything. So it's one of those things, like it's sort of a bit of a gold rush in the sense that the way I certainly can't compare like Barometrics to the App Store, but I mean, in the same way that like you hear somebody makes a lot of money on the App Store, ooh, I can do iPhone apps too. And you end up doing this, copy lots of people. And it's sort of the same case here, but on a, you know, much, much smaller scale, but that's kind of happened here. And so that's just really annoying more than anything. Like that's the part that's so frustrating. And then the other aspect of it, of like, because we have to be kind of private, I mean, we don't want to surface individual customers' data, I feel like we have to give a somewhat scaled back demo. And so the fear is that kind of almost implies that Barometrics doesn't do as much as it can, but it does. We just can't show it all from the privacy side of it.
That's so interesting. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. So as you're clicking and digging into details, you can't necessarily show every screen of
exactly. Stuff. Like I can show a couple of screenshots here and there, but I mean, I can't let you, we get into the, okay, well, we're, especially when you start talking about like customer profiles and stuff, right. We have to, at that point, have to generate a lot of fake data because we can't show any kind of customer identifiable information there. So we're looking at different ways to handle that, but it's like there's pros and cons, but the pros far outweigh the cons.
Yeah, outweighed it, right. So it sounds like you do feel like it brought some competition once folks saw your growth curve, but the pros were that it gave you this press early on.
Sure. Like if you look at our graph, like MRR, for instance, like the big inflection point is when Buffer made their stuff public, because it just instantly brought a ton of exposure. And so like, it changes the angle of the graph permanently.
Right.
And so, yeah, from that perspective, it was unquestionably the right move.
Right. And for folks who want to check that out, it's at buffer.barometrics.com. Another thought on transparency, I want to get your thought on it. I think there's been a movement towards it. And I think the first time I heard someone divulge their revenue a few years ago, I'm trying to even think of who it was. Like Pat Flynn's done it for a while. You have kind of become famous for doing it. It blew me away, right? It's this totally unique, groundbreaking thing. More and more companies are doing it now. Do you feel like it might be losing some of its impact and losing the maybe the bump that someone, if someone came out today, let's just say I came out today and exposed all of Drip's back end stuff. Do you feel like it would still be worth doing, or that the pros may be kind of getting watered down now that a lot of people are doing it?
I don't know that I would suggest, I mean, this is kind of a mixed bag here, mm-hmm. because we sort of partnered with Buffer and to do this open startup thing where, so barometrics.com/open, you can see, I don't know, it's maybe 7 or 8 different startups that have all made their Barometrics dashboards public. And like, there's this aspect of like wanting to support people being transparent because I think it can be interesting. The problem is transparency, just solely for transparency's sake, I would say has lost its kind of gimmicky at mm-hmm. this point. I think when you can use it to tell some kind of story, right? Like for us, the story it tells is like the Barometrics story, right? Like mm-hmm. it is a demo of our software. It makes complete sense from that perspective. And the fact that the numbers are our actual numbers kind of has this like, oh, well, that's neat kind of aspect of it. That's, I think, kind of can go a long way to maybe adding some sort of face to the company. But like Joe Schmo's random billing software, or like, I don't know, maybe he sells some subscription t-shirts or something. Like, are his numbers all that interesting? Probably not to all startups, but maybe to other t-shirt companies. And so like, if he's taking the role of trying to help other t-shirt companies like show you how to start them and kind of the ups and downs, okay, like I think that can be interesting. Or like on a regular basis, taking a look at your numbers and saying like, hey, we had a big spike in user churn. Let's talk through that publicly about like why that happened and how we can fix it, because I think that's helpful to other startups. But I think a lot of people just like start posting their numbers like, because that's just what people do. And I think there's a little bit of vanity to it as well. Like, I was guilty of it at first in the sense of like I would post on Twitter, like, our MRR is at X. And it's like, some of that was just, I'm excited because like, wait, hey, the company's growing. But I mean, to some extent, sure. I feel like I was bragging to some extent too. And so I try to be a little bit more humble about it at this point, but.
Sure. Yeah, I've definitely caught some people, or in my mind, like I feel like certain people are transparent to truly help others. And then some folks, I do get the bragging vibe from them of kind of like, look at sure. me, look how cool I am.
Yeah.
Type thing. I think it's an easy trap to fall into for sure.
Yeah, especially early on, like, and if you feel like you've got a little bit of traction, and especially when you're like, it's easy to look at yourself from the lens of basically the people that are in your little circle of influence. And if maybe you're doing better than the 10 guys that you hang out with, then it's like, it quickly can kind of become a bragging thing. But like, if you're doing it just to kind of be like a show off, I think it kind of turns people off.
Right. Right. Yeah. There's an interesting thing I was thinking about. It's like, there's ongoing transparency, which is kind of what you've done and what Buffer's done. And then I think there's like point in time transparency, which you just touched on, where you might write a single blog post about how churn went up. This is what it was. This is what we got it to. And here's what we did. And that's super helpful, right?
Right.
But you're not necessarily just saying, here's my churn every day. You can come and look at it. I think that point in time aspect is something that I've personally leaned towards. Like I will, you know, you've been to microconfs. I will sure. often divulge everything. I do it once a year, if that. Yep. And it's not necessarily a commitment that I've made, but I have an open source, or not open source, but I haven't made everything open. But I think there's some value in transparency. I guess it's just, yeah, I just wanted to hear your take on it.
Well, and I mean, the first, I don't know, maybe 6 to 8 months after I made our stuff public, I would do a monthly blog post like, hey, here's the July update of our numbers, and would kind of touch on what worked and what didn't. But I mean, to some extent, it was like, it was a point in time thing and not necessarily all that useful. And so we stopped doing those. But like, to me, there's a lot more value. So like content marketing works really well for us. And specifically me once a week, writing as in-depth of a blog post as I am able to push out that week. But like trying to just genuinely be helpful to other people. And for us, our target market's other startups or other entrepreneurs. So that's a sort of an easy thing for us. But I think like transparency when it matters to other people is what's more interesting, right? Like I remember a couple of microcomps ago, you talked about making your numbers public. Like the one where you had shown, so not this past one, like a couple months ago, but the one before that with Drip. Yeah. And how that just like showing the growth of that was so interesting to me and kind of opened my eyes a little bit about like, oh, okay. So like, that's probably what something more successful looks like. Oh, actually, that's probably been 3 years ago.
Might've been Hittail.
Hittail. That was what it was.
So this is when you were back before Bear Metrics, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Pop Survey and Temper, and like stuff was in my head, like kind of going okay, but also at the same time, in hindsight, it was awful.
Yeah. And now that you've
now that I've like, you know, had a different level of success there. And so, but when I saw like how Hittail, how you're able to grow that, and it's like, that's when I started thinking like, okay, like I could potentially make some software that could make a lot more money than it's making right now. And I just needed to find a different thing to do that with. But that's where it was super helpful, right? So for you to release those numbers, because it was a motivator for me.
Right. No, that's a good point. I want to switch this up a little bit and talk about funding, because you've been a bootstrapper for a decade or more. You launched Pop Survey, you had Temper. I'm sure there's many others that I haven't heard of that you bootstrapped. And you launched Bear Metrics. It was getting great growth numbers. And at a certain point, you were offered funding. The numbers are public, I'm pretty sure. It's $500,000. Yep. And you took the funding. So, and I know that there are some folks out there that say, you know, you should always take funding. You should never take funding. And I'm not in either of those camps. And I know that you aren't either. So I'd like to hear what your motivation was and what your decision process was like when you were considering, do I keep Bear Metrics all my own, or do I take some money and essentially move faster, but now have some investors that I'm working with?
Yeah. So for me, there had been this point where Bear Metrics was doing, from like a growth perspective, talking percentages, I think was doing between like 20 and 50% month over month growth in, with MRR. And so at that point, like that, and our numbers were public. So you know, like those are the kind of growth rates where investors start like, ooh, that's kind of interesting. How can I have a piece of the pie? So I started getting all these phone calls or emails or whatever, and I humored a few people, but for the most part, it was just kind of the typical, like, I'm just not comfortable with giving up that much of the company, and we just aren't really jiving. Oh, you sound like a jerk, like all these kinds of things where it just wasn't sitting right with me. And I was fine with where we were at. Like, I think when most of the funding emails started, it was me for the most part. And then like I had just hired another engineer. And so like, we're doing fine. And I didn't have any really big aspirations at the time, but I was still kind of riding the wave of like, oh, this worked. And so, yeah, then this $500,000 thing came up and just the terms ultimately, like, I mean, honestly, if you start thinking of the health of the business and maybe what my goals are for the business, I would have been an idiot to not take it. And I think that's where my mind shift had changed, was like, I was proud of the bootstrapped aspect of it. But when you start looking at things from a different perspective of like, well, the things that we could do with this money and what are the sacrifices relative to that? If the sacrifices aren't anything I'm opposed to, then well, yeah, why not? You know, and so the valuation was $500,000 for at a $10 million valuation, which equates to 5%.
Yeah. And so they don't have control.
No. And so technically, so it's a safe, like they don't even have the shares. They get the shares in the event that we sell or that we raise a full round.
Right. So it's essentially so a convertible note, right? It's a loan.
But it's not even that. I don't have to pay it back unless, like, if I shut the business down, there's no time, there's no date attached to anything. Like, nobody's hand can possibly force me.
Got it.
In any perspective. So like, it was just, it would have been dumb for me to not take it.
Yeah. Those are some very generous terms.
Right.
And when you're making that decision, there's this money on the table and obviously the terms are favorable. And that's the interesting part is I have stopped saying I won't take funding. And I've started asking myself these questions, like when I go on retreats or whatever, like under what circumstances would I take funding? You know, and that it's a different way to ask it, but yeah. Obviously there were very appealing terms. You took the money. Did you know when you took this $500,000, how you were going to spend it?
Yeah, absolutely. I was itching to hire some people. Like after I started thinking through, I mean, when that was suggested as, hey, we could put in this amount of money, like I instantly started kind of sitting down and brainstorming of all the ways that I could spend it and ways that, what does Bare Metrics need to grow and to like see the goals through that I had think kind of can keep Bare Metrics growing. And I mean, people is ultimately what was going to make that happen. So that was an easy one. For sure.
And how long has it been? About a year now?
So it's been 10, let's see, we closed on the deal in, I think, September.
Okay. So in like 9, 10 months. Yeah.
Yeah. Somewhere around there.
So now you have some perspective and some distance from it. Was it the right choice? Was it a good choice for you?
Yes, absolutely the right choice. I think in hindsight, I think I would have done a few things differently. There was a little bit of a, holy crap, there's $500,000 sitting in my bank account now. Woohoo, let's spend some money, right? And I mean, part of it is the investor wants you to spend their money. I mean, they're giving it to you, not so it just sits there in a bank account. But at the same time, like I probably spent too fast. And at the time I was still maintaining the like 20, 30% average growth rate per month. And then like shortly thereafter, the growth rate started like not tanking, but it wasn't 20% or
30% leveling
out. Yeah. Right. You know, which is like, that was inevitable, but it happened over the course of like 30 to 60 days. Like it happened pretty quick. And I think from that perspective, I kind of ended up overshooting early on how much I was spending. Mm. Yep. So like we're at a point now, like we should be fine without like needing to raise any more money, but it's just like having to be a little bit more cautious with how we're spending money at this point.
Right. Yeah. When you're growing like that, it's easy to get ahead of yourself and say, well, in 6 months, we're going to be at 50 or 60,000 recurring revenue. And therefore I need to staff up to all these people. And it's easy to spend money quick when you're growing that fast. I know the feeling. Now, what leveled off after you raised the money, did you catch any flack from your investors? Did they expect that? Or were they kind of concerned when that happened?
Yeah. So they've just been helpful. I mean, we have a roadmap wise, the stuff that's on the roadmap is partially influenced by customers, partially influenced by like investor input about ways that we could potentially expand from a market perspective. And so if anything, they certainly weren't like, oh man, that's bad news.
Right.
Like, sort of, hey, yeah, here's some things you could work on to probably fix these things. And so that stuff's kind of getting put into action now.
Right. Now, typically, if you're going to raise an angel round, the majority of folks who are going to give you this money expect a Series A and then a Series B, and they want a $100 million valuation, right? Or they want a $100 million market. Was that the expectation that was communicated to you? Or did you guys talk about kind of the fund strapping route where you said, I'm going to raise a single round, I want to use it to get to profitability and build a nice profitable business? Was any of that discussed?
So some of that was discussed. I think, like, if we think of the purpose of my funding round, my money technically came from General Catalyst, which is a big VC. They're not typically like angel round investors, but it's part of this Stripe specific fund that they've created. And they're like one of the main investors in Stripe. So if for them, it's like, it's a mixture of, sure, they want their money back with some returns on it, but it's also this sort of vote of confidence in the Stripe ecosystem for them. So like marketing play is not necessarily the right phrase, but it's like for them is just as much about saying like, let's beef up like Stripe. You know, they've got however much hundreds of millions of dollars put into Stripe. So if they can make Stripe more successful,
right,
then this is like, then that kind of pays off indirectly for them. So
it's almost like a strategic investment right. for them. Right. And it, yeah. to build the ecosystem.
Exactly. And so that's kind of, again, like that was one way that ours was sort of unique from that perspective. And so that's sort of why I also have a little bit less stress mm-hmm. from the, oh man, I've got to get their money back. I'm a good human being perspective. Like I don't want to lose their money,
right.
but at the same time, they're not like screaming at me
right.
about anything.
Yeah, that's nice. So, you know, to kind of wrap up the funding portion, we've talked about the advantages and kind of the no-brainer aspect of raising this round for you. You're 9 or 10 months out. Have there been any major kind of negatives or regrets or like bad things that it brought about?
Not really. I think in hindsight, I would be a lot more careful. And this is just naivety on my part about the valuation side of things. Because if you think of it in terms of how much of the company you're giving up, like, okay, at the end of the day, kind of giving up 5%. Fine, whatever. That's basically not, like, I would give up more, right? So I have thought, like, hey, like, well, how about I'll go and I could actually technically add on to the same round even 9 months later. And that would be great. More money, right? But the problem is I kind of got like a Silicon Valley valuation, which in a lot of times are a little inflated. And so it makes it a lot harder for me to raise additional funds if I wanted to, because a small time investor is like, that's not worth it for them at that valuation because they've got such a tiny piece of the pie.
Right.
So I think in hindsight, I probably, even though like they suggested the valuation, like in hindsight, I probably should have downplayed that a little bit.
Right.
Make it easier to raise more.
Yeah, right. Instead of potentially having to have a down round later.
Exactly,
or,
right? Because yeah. Nobody wants that. So.
Right. Do you watch Silicon Valley on HBO?
Yeah, it's great.
I love that show. So remember when he negotiates down with the VC because he wants a lower valuation?
Right. Like, that's that.
Yeah. Yeah, so, no, I totally get it.
And I think, like, sort of one more point here to the whole valuation thing. Like, I raise money from a big VC fund, whereas there is a whole slew of like single person angel investors, a lot of them completely disconnected from the tech scene, who would love to give people money for pretty decent valuations and like not have a lot of demands about things. Like I think that's sort of where the dogmatic bootstrapper mindset comes from, is all the really awful junk that they read on TechCrunch. Mm-hmm. That's not the norm. Like, that's not what most of the investment world looks like. It just, because the rest of it's just boring. It makes for bad news. So I think like if people are interested in potential, like say they just want like $100,000 would go a really long way for them. You can probably find one angel investor or a few angel investors who would come in together at a decent valuation to give you that money and would just be genuinely helpful, or maybe even completely hands off. And they just kind of want to get their hands dirty in like the tech space. So I think like if people are interested in that, they should like ignore the hype that they read elsewhere and just kind of start poking around places like AngelList to find like individual angel investors who are just kind of want to help people out because they exist for sure.
Right. Yeah. I like the term Colin from customer.io used. He called it fund strapping, and it's where you raise a small seed round of, I like to think of it as between 100 and 500,000. I'm kind of being arbitrary about that, but I think that's probably the range you'd want to do it in. And you raise it from between one and five angels. And it's like you said, they don't take control. They don't get a board seat. They can't kick you out. And then you use it essentially to get to profitability. And it's more of the way that traditional businesses are funded, say a restaurant or a car wash or a dry cleaner. You're just probably going to have a lot higher profit margin than those. So it's an interesting approach.
That's the thing. Like, there is a, I guess, a small possibility that it would make sense for us to try to raise a Series A or something like that. But what I am staunchly opposed to is having to be the founder, a founder who just raises money all the time.
Yeah.
You know, and that, because there's so many that do have to do that, where the CEO is essentially the guy who, like, okay, he raised a round. Well, 6 months later, he's got to start again because it's going to take it's going to take 6 months to close another round. And he has to keep doing that over and over. And I hate that junk. So
yeah.
I have no intention of doing that. I mean, profitability for me is the goal.
Right. Yeah, I think of it, I use the phrase building slide decks instead of building a business, right? And I want to, I'd prefer to build a business. So I feel you on that. Cool. Okay. So our last topic of the day is competition. I like to think that anytime you have a good idea and you execute on it and you achieve some success, you are going to, by nature, bring competition into your space. And you have done that well. You had a good idea with one-click analytics for Stripe. You obviously had success and were public about it. And so many competitors have sprung up around Baremetrics. Do you think that competition is good? By I say good, I mean beneficial to you. Or, because you kind of hear both mindsets of, well, competition validates a market, but you were already in the market. You had already validated it was working. So do you feel like, boy, having more competition is helpful and it's generating more attention around the space? Or do you feel like the more crowded it gets, the harder it is to be heard above the noise?
So to me, I think of it from the point of view of the customer, right? So competition is ultimately good for the customer, which I think ultimately is good for us because, you know, we'll hear indirectly a customer say, like, hey, I was checking out your competition and they have X feature, which means, translates to, they solve X problem that I have. So can you solve that problem for me? Well, maybe not right now, but if I hear it from enough people, then yeah, we'll try to solve that problem for you. And I think that it's good from that perspective. Where it stops being good is when there are two dozen people companies who are all kind of the same. And so we're trying really hard. I think this sort of space, this sort of like analytics that you don't have to think about or work to set up kind of space, we're at a point where we're kind of start to kind of fork, where there's a lot of people playing the baseline metrics game, where click here, connect your Stripe account, and you get MRR, lifetime value, churn, all this stuff. But on that level, it's not, like, it's useful, but there has to be something else past that, I think, for it to be really valuable. But that also, it's really difficult to build. But that's where I feel like we're starting to kind of fork off on our own, is trying to move away from a numbers game and move into the genuinely useful for making business decisions game. Like, helping people understand why things are what they are and how to fix them and that kind of thing. And so I think the prevalence of so many competitors right now has helped push us in that direction, which I think is ultimately a positive thing. But I mean, like, holy crap, is it annoying?
Right. Like, you see people, you know, pop up with your whatever if they, and I don't know of anybody who's done this, but I would have to imagine, because I've seen it with my stuff, people are popping up probably using your same tagline, probably using names that are similar to you, probably using designs that are similar to yours.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
It's amazing. I mean, almost, there's one that's been kind of, I've seen making the rounds a lot more, mainly their content stuff, like the stuff that they're randomly posting on their blog, I've seen a lot. And I'll go to their software or whatever. It is a direct ripoff of Baremetrics. And it's just like, how do you sleep at night? Like, and people using our logo, but like changing from to a different shade of blue or something. Right. I mean, just stupid stuff. That's like, at the end of the day, copycats, their motivation is purely to try to make a quick buck. And in a year, they won't exist. But for the year that they're around, like, man, you're like the annoying kid at school who keeps tapping me on the shoulder. Like, go away.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about them.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. You're in a space where the onboarding is really easy, right? It's one click to get in. Is that also, I mean, it seems like that would be a double-edged sword. It's easy to get people onboarded, but then it's easy for people to switch.
To leave.
Yeah.
switching costs are way too low right now. And so, yes, that is probably our number one problem from a churn perspective, is that switching costs are so low, which is in the short term good for a customer because it gives them a lot of options. At the same time, it makes for a customer who doesn't want to get invested in your software, which maybe for them that sounds like a good thing. But I think when you're like so wishy-washy about trying to solve, at the end of the day, solve your own business problems, being wishy-washy and not just saying like, here's what we're going to use, here's what we're going to stick with, and this is what we're going to base our business around. When you stop acting like that, you end up, I think, you end up with stuff that's just not useful at all. And so, yeah, so we've got a bunch of stuff that's coming out soon that the switching costs will be much higher. And that sounds a little like just rude, but at the same time, I think it ultimately will make for software that people in the long term get a lot more value out of.
Right. Well, I mean, it's hard if you have 20 people in a space or 15 people in a space with no, maybe one clear leader and everybody else is kind of milling around creating noise, the customer's actually not getting the best software because everybody's right. competing. Whereas if there are only two or three in the space and they're really duking it out, then you're going to get some awesome new features, right? They're going to be innovating against each other and that kind of stuff. So I think it's interesting that as essentially it's like the one-click Stripe analytics, as you said, has almost become a baseline for a lot of these products, and you now have to rise above it, which in the short term is probably painful and it's annoying to see all the competition, but in the long term, it's going to make for better products and it's going to make you move pretty fast, which I think is better for the customer.
I totally, 100% agree with that.
Cool. All right. So you've actually had a customer, I don't know how, or I'm sorry, not a customer, but a competitor crop up who's offering one-click Stripe Analytics for free. So they're kind of doing a freemium model. When you first heard that news, I can imagine the look on your face. Was that brutal, or was it where you kind of like, yep, I knew this day would come?
I certainly wasn't surprised. I think after you start kind of poking around to see, okay, first, how are you even doing that? Because like it's expensive to store massive amounts of data and process it. Like it's expensive. So I was like, how are you guys pulling that off? And then you start realizing, okay, this is actually like a lead generator for their other business, which is a completely legitimate business. The other one is, and lots of people love them, but it's like when you're like releasing this tool just as a lead generator, then no way does that software sort of stand the test of time because it's ultimately like a loss leader for you. And that stuff's so hard to maintain, especially on a small team. And so they don't worry me. And our customers' feedback on that has been basically the same, that like, hey, if we're using this other one, it's because it's free, but like no way would we ever stop using you guys. Their stuff's just not good. So
right. It
doesn't bother me. And in reality, so in the next month or so, hopefully we'll actually have a free version. Like this plays into our long-term plan. Like in the short term, we actually may take a little bit of a hit, but in the short term, yeah, we'll start playing a little bit of the free game, the freemium game, to see how it plays out. We haven't, because we've never had a free plan. I mean, a year and a half in, and we've never tested it. So it seems a little short-sighted of me to not at least humor that is a possibility.
Right, as a test. And so that was kind of my next question is like, so how do you compete with free? Because obviously this is going to happen to anyone who has a good idea and has some success. You're eventually going to get a free competitor. And it sounds like so far, number one is you know the game. You've been doing this now for 18 months, 2 years. And so you know that what it takes to really run this service in terms of cost and team size and to continue to innovate. And number two is potentially fight fire with fire, maybe release a free version, and to continue to build and innovate, right? You have to stay ahead of the game. You have to keep building features that they don't have.
Exactly. And I mean, it's just one of those things where you kind of have to just, I know what our goals are and I can't make any assumptions about what my competitor's goals are. Like the types of problems that one competitor is solving for their customer base, however small it may be, is not necessarily the same as what I'm doing. And so it would be super short-sighted of me to say like, oh, well, they just launched some feature, I need to do the same thing. No, not necessarily. Like their customers may want that, but our customers may not. Or the way that we solve that problem is totally different. So I think it's just being hyper-focused on what it is that you do and you do well is kind of the way to not worry about competition.
Well said. All right, sir. So if folks want to keep up with you online, aside from checking out baremetrics.com, which again is one-click SaaS analytics for Stripe, how would folks keep up with you, whether it's a blog URL or a Twitter handle?
So Twitter is at Spigvard, and that's really about it. I don't blog much anymore.
All right. I would recommend your podcast, which is called Founders Journey.
Yep.
Is that right? Yep. I've been listening to it for the past couple months, and it's essentially you reading some blog posts that you've posting on the Baremetrics blog and ad-libbing. You're adding more stuff, which has been kind of cool.
Thank you.
Very good. Well, thanks again for coming on the show today, man.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
That wraps us up for today. Thanks again to Josh for coming on the show. If you have a question for us, call our voicemail number at 888-801-9690 or email us at questions@startupsfortherestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt from We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsfortherestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.